getting so close that she was able to reach out and stop him. He resisted grabbing that arm and hanging on for dear life. His mind was catching up to what was happening. She wanted to meet him, but in a realm where she belonged and he did not. Well, he would contain his fear.
"Moash,"
the fused said. Leshwi, the other had called her. She had a face that was all three Parshendi colors, white, red, and black, marbled like paint swirled together. He had rarely seen someone who was all three colors before, and this was one of the most transfixing patterns he'd seen, almost liquid in its effect. Her eyes like pools around which the colors ran.
"How do you know my name?" Moash asked. "Your overseer told me," Leshwi said.
She had a distinct serenity about her as she floated with feet down. The wind up here tugged at the ribbons she wore, pushing them backward in careless ripples. There were no wind spren in sight, oddly.
"Where did you get that name?"
"My grandfather named me," Moash said, frowning. This was not how he'd anticipated this conversation going.
"Curious. Do you know that it is one of our names?"
"It is?" She nodded.
"How long has it drifted on the tides of time, passing from the lips of singers to men and back, to end up here on the head of a human slave?"
"Look, you're one of the leaders?"
"I'm one of the fused who is sane," she said, as if it were the same thing.
"Then I need to..."
"You're bold," Leshwi said, eyes forward. "Many of the singers we left here are not. We find them remarkable, considering how long they were abused by your people. But still, they are not bold enough."
She looked to him for the first time during the conversation. Her face was angular, with long flowing parchment hair, black and crimson, thicker than that of a human, almost like thin reeds or blades of grass. Her eyes were a deep red, like pools of shimmering blood.
"Where did you learn the surges, human?" she asked.
"The surges?"
"When you killed me," she said, "you were lashed to the sky, but you responded quickly with familiarity. I will say, without guile, that I was furious to be caught so unaware."
"Wait," Moash said, cold. "When I killed you?" She regarded him, unblinking with those ruby eyes. "You're the same one?" Moash asked. That pattern of marbled skin, he realized. It's the same as the one I fought. But the features were different.
"This is a new body offered to me in sacrifice," Leshwi said. "To bond and make my own, as I have none."
"You're some kind of spren?" She blinked, but did not reply. Moash started to drop. He felt it in his clothes, which lost their power to fly first. He cried out, reaching toward the fused woman, and she seized him by the wrist and injected him with more void light. It surged across his body, and he hovered again. The violet darkness retreated, visible again only as faint periodic crackles on her skin.
"My companion spared you," she said to him. "Brought you here to these lands as they thought I might wish personal vengeance once reborn. I did not. Why would I destroy that which had such passion? Instead, I watched you, curious to see what you did. I saw you help the singers who were pulling the sledges."
Moash took a deep breath. "Can you tell me, then, why you treat your own so poorly?"
"Poorly?" she said, sounding amused. "They are fed, clothed, and trained. Not all of them, Moash said. You had those poor Parshmen working as slaves, like humans, and now you're going to throw them at the city walls.
Sacrifice, she said. Do you think an empire is built without sacrifice?
She swept her arm across the landscape before them. Moash's stomach turned over. He'd briefly been able to fixate only on her and forget exactly how high he was. Storms, this land was big. He could see extensive hills, plains, grass, trees, and stone in all directions. And in the direction she gestured, a dark line on the horizon. Kolinar?
I breathe again because of their sacrifices, Leshwe said. And this world will be ours because of sacrifice. Those who fall will be sung of, but their blood is ours to demand. If they survive the assault, if they prove themselves, then they will be honored.
She looked to him again.
You fought for them during the trip here.
Honestly, I expected you to have me killed for that.
If you were not killed for striking down one of the fused, she said, then why would you be killed for striking one of our lessers? In both cases, human. You proved your passion and earned your right to succeed. Then you bowed to authority when presented and earned your right to continue to live. Tell me, why? Did you protect those slaves?
Because you need to be unified, Moash said. He swallowed. My people don't deserve this land. We're broken, ruined, incapable.
She cocked her head. A cool wind played with her clothing.
And are you not angered that we took your shards?
They were first given me by a man I betrayed. I don't deserve them.
No, not you. It's not your fault. You aren't angry that we conquer you?
No.
Then what does anger you? What is your passionate fury, Moash, the man with an ancient singer's name?
Yes, it was still there, still burning deep down.
Stormit, Kaladin had been protecting a murderer.
Vengeance, he whispered. Yes, I understand.
She looked at him, smiling in what seemed to him a distinctly sinister way.
Do you know why we fight? Let me tell you.
A half hour later, as evening approached, Moash walked the streets of a conquered town. By himself. Lady Leshwe had ordered that Moash be left alone, freed. He walked with his hands in the pockets of his bridge forecoat, remembering the frigid air up above. He still felt chilled, even though down here it was muggy and warm. This was a nice town. Quaint. Little stone buildings, plants growing at the backs of every house. On his left, that meant cultivated rock buds and bushes burst from around doors. But to his right, facing the storm, there were only blank stone walls, not even a window. The plants smelled of civilization to him, a sort of civic perfume that you didn't get out in the wilds. They barely quivered as he passed, though Lifespren bobbed at his presence. The plants were accustomed to people on the streets. He finally stopped at a low fence surrounding pens holding the horses the Voidbringers had captured. The animals munched cut grass the Parshmen had thrown to them. Such strange beasts. Hard to care for, expensive to keep. He turned from the horses and looked out over the fields toward Kolinar. She'd said he could leave, join the refugees making for the capital, defend the city.
What is your passionate fury?
Thousands of years being reborn? What would it be like? Thousands of years, and they'd never given up. Prove yourself. He turned and made his way back to the lumberyard where the workers were packing up for the day. There was no storm projected tonight, and they wouldn't have to secure everything, so they worked with a relaxed, almost jovial air. All save for his crew, who, as usual, gathered by themselves, ostracized. Moash seized a bundle of ladder rods off a pile. The workers there turned to object, but cut off when they saw who it was. He untied the bundle, and upon reaching the crew of unfortunate parchmen, tossed a length of wood to each one. Saw caught his and stood up, frowning. The others mimicked him.
"I can train you with those," Moash said.
"Sticks?" Chen asked.
"Spears," Moash said.
"I can teach you to be soldiers. We'll probably die anyway. Stormit will probably never make it to the top of the walls. But it's something."
The parchmen looked at one another, holding rods that could mimic spears.
"I'll do it," Chen said.
Slowly, the others nodded in agreement. 55. Alone Together. I am the least equipped of all to aid you in this endeavor. I am finding that the powers I hold are in such conflict that the most simple of actions can be difficult. Relaine sat on the shattered plains alone and listened to the rhythms. Enslaved parchmen, deprived of true forms, weren't able to hear the rhythms. During his years spent as a spy, he'd adopted dull form, which heard them weakly. It had been so hard to be apart from them. They weren't quite true songs. They were beats with hints of tonality and harmony. He could attune one of several dozen to match his mood, or, conversely, to help alter his mood. His people had always assumed the humans were deaf to the rhythms, but he wasn't convinced. Perhaps it was his imagination, but it seemed that sometimes they responded to certain rhythms. They'd look up at a moment of frenzied beats, eyes getting a far-off look. They'd grow agitated and shout in time for a moment, to the rhythm of irritation, or whoop, right on beat with a rhythm of joy. It comforted him to think that they might someday learn to hear the rhythms. Perhaps then he wouldn't feel so alone. He currently attuned the rhythm of the lost, a quiet yet violent beat with sharp, separated notes. You attuned it to remember the fallen, and that felt the correct emotion as he sat here outside Narok, watching humans build a fortress from what used to be his home. They set a watchpost atop the central spire, where the five had once met to discuss the future of his people. They turned homes into barracks. He was not offended. His own people had repurposed the ruins of Stormseat into Narok. No doubt these stately ruins would outlast the Alethi occupation, as they had the listeners. That knowledge did not prevent him from mourning. His people were gone now. Yes, parchmen had awakened, but they were not listeners. No more than Alethi and Vadens were the same nationality simply because most had similar skin tones. Relaine's people were gone. They had fallen to Alethi swords or had been consumed by the Everstorm, transformed into incarnations of the old listener gods. He was, as far as he knew, the last. He sighed, pulling himself to his feet. He swung a spear to his shoulder, the spear they let him carry. He loved the men of Bridge Four, but he was an oddity, even to them. The parchman they allowed to be armed. The potential Voidbringer they had decided to trust, and wasn't he just so lucky? He crossed the plateau to where a group of them trained under Teft's watchful eye. They didn't wave to him. They often seemed surprised to find him there, as if they'd forgotten he was around. But when Teft did notice him, the man's smile was genuine. They were his friends. It was merely... How could Relaine be so fond of these men, yet at the same time want to slap them? When he and Scar had been the only two who couldn't draw Stormlight, they'd encouraged Scar. They'd given him pep talks, told him to keep trying. They had believed in him. Relaine, though? Well, who knew what would happen if he could use Stormlight? Might it be the first step in turning him into a monster? Never mind that he'd told them you had to open yourself to a form to adopt it. Never mind that he had the power to choose for himself. Though they never spoke of it, he saw the truth in their reactions. As with Dabbed, they thought it best that Relaine remain without Stormlight. The Parshman and the Insane Man. People you couldn't trust as Windrunners. 5 bridgemen launched into the air, radiant and streaming with light. Some of the crew trained, while another group patrolled with Kaladin, checking on caravans. A third group, the 10 other newcomers that had learned to draw in Stormlight, trained with Pete a few plateaus over. That group included Lynn and all 4 of the other scouts, along with 4 men from other bridge crews and a single light-eyed officer. Kolat, the archer captain. Lynn had slid into Bridge 4's camaraderie easily, as had a couple of the bridgemen. Relaine tried not to feel jealous that they almost seemed more a part of the team than he did. Teft led the 5 in the air through a formation while the 4 others strolled toward Rock's drink station. Relaine joined them, and Yake slapped him on the back, pointing toward the next plateau over where the bulk of the hopefuls continued to train.
"That group can barely hold a spear properly," Yake said. "You ought to go show them how a real bridgeman does a kata, eh, Relaine?" "Kalak help them if they have to fight those shellheads," Eth added, taking a drink from Rock. "No offense, Relaine."
Relaine touched his head where he had carapace armor, distinctively thick and strong as he held warform, covering his skull. It had stretched out his Bridge 4 tattoo, which had transferred to the carapace. He had protrusions on his arms and legs, too, and people always wanted to feel those. They couldn't believe they actually grew from his skin, and somehow thought it was appropriate to try to peek underneath.
"Relaine," Rock said, "is okay to throw things at Eth. He has hard head, too, almost like he has shell."
"It's all right," Relaine said, because that was what they expected him to say. He accidentally attuned irritation, though, and the rhythm laced his words. To cover his embarrassment, he attuned curiosity and tried Rock's drink of the day.
"This is good. What is in it?"
"Ha! Is water I boiled kremlings in before serving them last night."
F spurted out his mouthful of drink, then looked at the cup, aghast.
"What?"
Rock said.
"You ate the kremlings easily."
"But this is like their bath water," Eth complained.
"Chilled," Rock said, "with spices. Is good taste."
"Is bath water," Eth said, imitating Rock's accent.
Teft led the other 4 in a streaking wave of light overhead. Relaine looked up and found himself attuning longing before he stomped it out. He attuned peace instead. Peace, yes. He could be peaceful.
"This isn't working," Dreyu said. "We can't storming patrol the entirety of the shattered plains. More caravans are going to get hit like that one last night. The captain says it's strange for those Voidbringers to keep raiding like this," Eth said. "Tell that to the caravaneers from yesterday."
Yake shrugged.
"They didn't even burn much. We got there before the Voidbringers had time to do much more than frighten everyone. I'm with the captain. It's strange." "Maybe they're testing our abilities," Eth said. "Seeing what Bridge 4 can really do."
They glanced at Relaine for confirmation.
Am I supposed to be able to answer?" he asked.
"Well," Eth said, "I mean, storms, Relaine. They're your kinsmen. Surely you know something about them."
"You can guess, right?" Yake said.
Rock's daughter refilled his cup for him, and Relaine looked down at the clear liquid.
"Don't blame them," he thought. "They don't know. They don't understand."
"Yes, Yake," Relaine said carefully. "My people did everything we could to separate ourselves from those creatures. We went into hiding long ago, and swore we would never accept forms of power again. I don't know what changed. My people must have been tricked somehow. In any case, these fused are as much my enemies as they are yours. More, even. And no, I can't say what they will do. I spent my entire life trying to avoid thinking of them."
Teft's group came crashing down to the plateau. For all his earlier difficulties, Scar had quickly taken to flight. His landing was the most graceful of the bunch. Hobber hit so hard he yelped. They jogged over to the watering station, where Rock's eldest daughter and son began giving them drinks. Relaine felt sorry for the two. They barely spoke Alethi, though the son, oddly, was Vorin. Apparently monks came from Yakaved to preach the Almighty to the Horn-Eaters, and Rock let his children follow any god they wanted. So it was that the pale-skinned young Horn-Eater wore a glyph ward tied to his arm and burned prayers to the Vorin Almighty instead of making offerings to the Horn-Eater Spren. Relaine sipped his drink and wished Renarin were here. The quiet, light-eyed man usually made a point of speaking with Relaine. The others jabbered excitedly but didn't think to include him. Parshmen were invisible to them. They'd been brought up that way. And yet he loved them because they did try. When Scar bumped him and was reminded that he was there, he blinked, then said, "Maybe we should ask Relaine." The others immediately jumped in and said he didn't want to talk about it, giving a kind of Alethi version of what he'd told them earlier. He belonged here as much as he did anywhere else. Bridge Four was his family, now that those from Narok were gone. Eshenai, Varanus, Thud. He attuned the rhythm of the lost and bowed his head. He had to believe that his friends in Bridge Four could feel a hint of the rhythms, for otherwise how would they know how to mourn with true pain of soul? Teft was getting ready to take the other squad into the air when a group of dots in the sky announced the arrival of Kaladin Stormblessed. He landed with his squad, including Lopin, who juggled an uncut gemstone the size of a man's head. They must have found a chrysalis from a beast of the chasms.
"No sign of Voidbringers today,"
Leighton said, turning over one of Rock's buckets and using it as a seat.
"But storms! The plains sure do seem smaller when you're up there."
"Yeah," Lopin said. "And bigger."
"Smaller and bigger?" Scar asked.
"Smaller," Leighton said, "because we can cross them so fast. I remember plateaus that felt like they took years to cross. We zip past those in an eye blink."
"But then you get up high," Lopin added, "and you realize how wide this place is. Sure how much of it we never even explored. And it just seems big."
The others nodded, eager. You had to read their emotion in their expressions and the way they moved, not in their voices. Maybe that was why emotion spren came so often to humans, more often than to listeners. Without the rhythms, men needed help understanding one another.
"Who's on the next patrol?" Scar asked.
"None for today," Kaladin said. "I have a meeting with Dalinar. We'll leave a squad in Narok, but..."
Soon after he left through the Oath Gate, everyone would slowly start to lose their powers. They'd be gone in an hour or two. Kaladin had to be relatively near. Sigzil had placed their maximum distance from him at around 50 miles, though their abilities started to fade somewhere around 30 miles.
"Fine," Scar said. "I was looking forward to drinking more of Rock's Kremling juice anyway."
"Kremling juice?"
Sigzil said, drink halfway to his lips. Other than Relaine, Sigzil's dark brown skin was the most different from the rest of the crew, though the bridgemen didn't seem to care much about skin color. To them, only eyes mattered. Relaine had always found that strange, as among listeners, your skin patterns had at times been a matter of some import.
So, Scar said, are we going to talk about Renarin?
The 28 men shared looks, many settling down around the barrel of Rock's drink as they once had around the cook fire. There were certainly a suspicious number of buckets to use as stools, as if Rock had planned for this. The horn-eater himself leaned against the table he'd brought out for holding cups, a cleaning rag thrown over his shoulder.
"What about him?" Kaladin asked, frowning and looking around at the group. "He's been spending a lot of time with the scribes studying the Tower City," Natum said. "The other day," Scar added, "he was talking about what he's doing there. It sounded an awful lot like he was learning how to read."
The men shifted uncomfortably.
So? Kaladin asked. What's the problem?
Sigsel can read his own language. Storm's eye can read glyphs.
It's not the same, Scar said. It's feminine, Drahi added.
Drahi, Kaladin said,
you are literally courting a man.
So? Drahi said.
Yeah. What are you saying, Cal?
Scar snapped.
Nothing, I just thought Drahi might empathize. That's hardly fair,
Drahi said.
Yeah, Lopin added. Drahi likes other guys. That's like, he wants to be even less around women than the rest of us. It's the opposite of feminine. He is, you could say, extra manly.
Yeah, Drahi said. Kaladin rubbed his forehead and Relaine empathized. It was sad that humans were so burdened by always being in mate form. They were always distracted by the emotions and passions of mating, and had not yet reached a place where they could put that aside. He felt embarrassed for them. They were simply too concerned about what a person should and shouldn't be doing. It was because they didn't have forms to change into. If Renarin wanted to be a scholar, let him be a scholar.
I'm sorry, Kaladin said, holding out his hand to calm the men. I wasn't trying to insult Drahi. But Storm's men, we know that things are changing. Look at the lot of us. We're halfway to being light eyes. We've already let 5 women into Bridge 4, and they'll be fighting with spears. Expectations are being upended, and we're the cause of it. So let's give Renarin a little leeway, shall we?
Relaine nodded. Kaladin was a good man. For all his faults, he tried even more than the rest of them.
I have thing to say, Rock added. During last few weeks, how many of you have come to me saying you feel you don't fit in with Bridge 4 now?
The plateau fell silent. Finally, Sigsel raised his hand, followed by Scar and several others, including Harbor.
Harbor, you did not come to me, Rock noted.
Oh. Yeah, but I felt like it, Rock.
He glanced down.
Everything's changing. I don't know if I can keep up.
I still have nightmares, Layton said softly, about what we saw in the bowels of Urethiru. Anyone else?
I have trouble with Lethe,
Huio said.
It makes me embarrassing. Alone.
I'm scared of heights, Torfin added. Flying up there is terrifying to me.
A few glanced at Teft.
What? Teft demanded. You expect this to be a feeling-sharing party because the storming horn-eater gave you a sour eye? Storm off! It's a miracle I'm not burning moss every moment of the day having to deal with you lot.
Natum patted him on the shoulder.
And I will not fight, Rock said. I know some of you do not like this. He makes me feel different, not only because I am only one with proper beard and crew.
He leaned forward.
Life is changing. We will all feel alone because of this, yes? Ha! Perhaps we can feel alone together.
They all seemed to find this comforting. Well, except Lopin, who had snuck away from the group and for some reason was lifting up rocks on the other side of the plateau and looking underneath them. Even among humans, he was a strange one. The men relaxed and started to chat. Though Hobber slapped Relaine on the back, it was the closest any of them came to asking how he felt. Was it childish of him to feel frustrated? They all thought they were alone, did they? Felt that they were outsiders? Did they know what it was like to be of an entirely different species? A species they were currently at war with? A species whose people had all been either murdered or corrupted? People in the tower watched him with outright hatred. His friends didn't, but they sure did like to pat themselves on the back for the fact.
"We understand that you're not like the others, Relaine. You can't help what you look like."
He attuned annoyance and sat there until Kaladin sent the rest of them off to train the aspiring Windrunners. Kaladin spoke softly with Rock, then turned and paused, seeing Relaine sitting there on his bucket.
"Relaine," Kaladin said, "why don't you take the rest of the day off?" "What if I don't want special accommodation because you feel sorry for me?"
Kaladin squatted down beside Relaine.
"Hey, you heard what Rock said? I know how you feel. We can help you shoulder this."
"Do you really?"
Relaine said.
"Do you actually know how I feel, Kaladin Stormblessed? Or is that simply a thing that men say?"
"I guess it's a thing men say," Kaladin admitted,
then pulled over an upside-down bucket for himself.
"Can you tell me how it feels?"
Did he really want to know? Relaine considered, then attuned resolve.
"I can try."
56. Always with you. I am also made uncertain by your subterfuge. Why have you not made yourself known to me before this? How is it you can hide? Who are you truly? And how do you know so much about Edonalsium?
Dalinar appeared in the courtyard of a strange fortress with a single towering wall of blood-red stones. It closed a large gap in a mountainous rock formation. Around him, men carried supplies or otherwise made themselves busy, passing in and out of buildings constructed against the natural stone walls. Winter air made Dalinar's breath puff before him. He held Navani's free hand on his left and Yasna's on his right. It had worked. His control over these visions was increasing beyond even what the Stormfather assumed possible. Today, by holding their hands, he had brought Navani and Yasna in without a high storm.
"Wonderful," Navani said, squeezing his hand. "That wall is as majestic as you described. And the people. Bronze weapons again, very little steel."
"That armor is soul-cast," Yasna said, releasing his hand. "Look at the finger marks on the metal. That's burnished iron, not true steel. Soul cast from clay into that shape.
I wonder, did access to soul casters retard their drive to learn smelting? Working steel is difficult. You can't simply melt it over a fire like you can bronze."
"So," Dalinar asked, "when are we?"
"Maybe 2,000 years ago," Yasna said. "Those are Harovingian swords, and see those archways? Late classical architecture, but washed out faux blue on the cloaks rather than true blue dyes. Mix that with the language you spoke in, which my mother recorded last time, and I'm fairly certain."
She glanced at the passing soldiers.
"A multi-ethnic coalition here like during the Desolations. But if I'm right, this is over 2,000 years after Ahariatiam."
"They're fighting someone," Dalinar said. "The Radiants retreat from a battle, then abandon their weapons on the field outside."
"Which places the Recreants a little more recently than Marsha Dada Shaliv had it in her history," Yasna said, musing. "From my reading of your vision accounts, this is the last chronologically, though it's difficult to place the one with you overlooking ruined Kolinar."
"Who could they be fighting?"
Navani asked, as men atop the wall raised the alarm. Horsemen galloped out of the keep, off to investigate.
This is well after the Voidbringers left.
It could be the false desolation, Jasnah said. Dalinar and Navani both looked at her.
A legend, Jasnah said. Considered pseudo-historical. Dovkanti wrote an epic about it somewhere around 1500 years ago. The claim is that some Voidbringers survived Ahari Etiam, and there were many clashes with them afterward. It's considered unreliable, but that's because many later Ardents insist that no Voidbringers could have survived. I'm inclined to assume this is a clash with Parshmen before they were somehow deprived of their ability to change forms. She looked at Dalinar, eyes alight, and he nodded. She strode off to collect whatever historical tidbits she could. Navani took some instruments from her satchel.
One way or another, I'm going to figure out where this Feverstone Keep is, even if I have to bully these people into drawing a map. Perhaps we could send scholars to this location and find clues about the recreants.
Dalinar made his way over to the base of the wall. It was a truly majestic structure, typical of the strange contrasts of these visions. A classical people, without fabrials or even proper metallurgy, accompanied by wonders. A group of men piled down the steps from the top of the wall. They were trailed by His Excellency Yonagon I, Prime Akasix of Aesir. While Dalinar had brought Navani and Jasnah by touch, he had asked the Stormfather to bring in Yonagon. The high storm currently raged in Aesir. The youth saw Dalinar and stopped.
"Do I have to fight today, Blackthorn?"
"Not today, Your Excellency."
"I'm getting really tired of these visions,"
Yonagon said, descending the last few steps.
"That fatigue never leaves, Your Excellency. In fact, it has grown as I've begun to grasp the importance of what I have seen in vision, and the burden it puts upon me."
"That isn't what I meant by tired."
Dalinar didn't reply, hands clasped behind him as together they walked to the sallyport, where Yonagon watched events unfold outside. Radiants were crossing the open plain or flying down. They summoned their blades, provoking concern from the watching soldiers. The knights drove their weapons into the ground, then abandoned them. They left their armor as well. Shards of incalculable value renounced. The young emperor looked to be in no rush to confront them as Dalinar had been. Dalinar therefore took him by the arm and guided him out as the first soldiers opened the doors. He didn't want the emperor to get caught in the flood that would soon come, as men dashed for those blades, then started killing one another. As before in this vision, Dalinar felt as if he could hear the screaming deaths of the Spren, the terrible sorrow of this field. It almost overwhelmed him.
"Why?" Yonagon asked. "Why did they just give up?"
"We don't know, Your Excellency. This scene haunts me. There is so much I don't understand. Ignorance has become the theme of my rule."
Yonagon looked around, then scrambled for a tall boulder to climb where he could better watch the radiance. He seemed far more engaged by this than he had been by other visions. Dalinar could respect that. War was war, but this... this was something you never saw. Men willingly giving up their shards? And that pain. It pervaded the air like a terrible stench. Yonagon settled down on his boulder.
"So why show me this? You don't even know what it means."
"If you're not going to join my coalition, I figure I should still give you as much knowledge as I can. Perhaps we will fall and you will survive. Maybe your scholars can solve these puzzles when we cannot. And maybe you are the leader Roshar needs while I am just an emissary."
"You don't believe that?"
"I don't. I still want you to have these visions, just in case."
Yonagon fidgeted, playing with the tassels on his leather breastplate.
"I don't matter as much as you think I do."
"Pardon, Your Excellency, but you underestimate your importance. Aesir's Oathgate will be vital, and you are the strongest kingdom of the West. With Aesir at our side, many other countries will join with us.
I mean, Yonagon said, that I don't matter. Sure, Azio does, but I'm only a kid they put on the throne because they were afraid that Assassin would come back.
And the miracle they're publishing? The proof from the heralds that you were chosen?
That was Lift, not me.
Yonagon looked down at his feet, swinging beneath him.
They're training me to act important, Colin. But I'm not. Not yet. Maybe not ever.
This was a new face to Yonagon. The vision today had shaken him, but not in the way Dalinar had hoped.
He's a youth, Dalinar reminded himself.
Life at his age was challenging anyway, without adding to it the stress of an unexpected accession to power.
Whatever the reason, Dalinar told the young emperor, you are prime. The viziers have published your miraculous elevation to the public. You do have some measure of authority.
He shrugged.
The viziers aren't bad people. They feel guilty for putting me in this position. They give me education, kind of force it down my throat, honestly, and expect me to participate. But I'm not ruling the Empire. They're scared of you. Very scared. More scared than they are of the Assassin. He burned the Emperor's eyes, but Emperors can be replaced. You represent something far more terrible. They think you could destroy our entire culture.
Noelethi has to set foot on Azish Stone, Dalinar said.
But come to me, Your Excellency. Tell them you've seen visions that the heralds want you to at least visit Urethiru. Tell them that the opportunities far outweigh the danger of opening that oath gate.
And if this happens again?
Yonagon asked, nodding toward the field of shard blades, hundreds of them sprouting from the ground, silvery, reflecting sunlight. Men were now pouring out of the keep, flooding toward those weapons.
We will see that it doesn't. Somehow.
Dalinar narrowed his eyes.
I don't know what caused the recreants, but I can guess. They lost their vision, Your Excellency. They became embroiled in politics and let divisions creep among them. They forgot their purpose, protecting Roshar for its people.
Yonagon looked to him, frowning.
That's harsh. You always seemed so respectful of the Radiance before.
I respect those who fought in the Desolations. These? I can sympathize. I, too, have on occasion let myself be distracted by small-minded pettiness. But respect? No.
He shivered.
They killed their spren. They betrayed their oaths. They may not be villains, as history paints them, but in this moment they failed to do what was right and just. They failed Roshar.
The Stormfather rumbled in the distance, agreeing with this sentiment. Yonagon cocked his head.
What?
Dalinar asked.
Lift doesn't trust you, he said.
Dalinar glanced about, expecting her to appear as she had in the previous two visions he'd shown Yonagon. There was no sign of the young Reshi girl that the Stormfather detested so much.
It's because,
Yonagon continued,
you act so righteous. She says anyone who acts like you do is trying to hide something.
A soldier strode up and spoke to Yonagon in the Almighty's voice.
They are the first.
Dalinar stepped back, letting the young emperor listen as the Almighty gave his short speech for this vision. These events will go down in history. They will be infamous. You will have many names for what happened here. The Almighty said the same words he had to Dalinar. The night of sorrows will come and the true desolation, the Everstorm. The men on the field full of shards started to fight over the weapons. For the first time in history, men started slaughtering one another with dead spren. Finally, Yonagon faded, vanishing from the vision. Dalinar closed his eyes, feeling the Stormfather draw away. Everything now dissolved. Except it didn't. Dalinar opened his eyes. He was still on the field before the looming blood-red wall of Feverstone Keep. Men fought over shard blades, while some voices called for everyone to be patient. Those who claimed a shard this day would become rulers. It bothered Dalinar that the best men, the ones calling for moderation or raising concerns, would be rare among their numbers. They weren't aggressive enough to seize the advantage. Why was he still here? Last time the vision had ended before this.
"Stormfather?" he asked.
No reply. Dalinar turned around. A man in white and gold stood there. Dalinar jumped, scrambling backward. The man was old, with a wide, furrowed face and bone-white hair that swept back from his head as if blown by wind. Thick mustaches with a hint of black in them blended into a short white beard. He seemed to be Shin, judging by his skin and eyes, and he wore a golden crown in his powdery hair. Those eyes. They were ancient, the skin surrounding them deeply creased, and they danced with joy as he smiled at Dalinar and rested a golden scepter on his shoulder. Suddenly overwhelmed, Dalinar fell to his knees.
"I know you," he whispered. You're him. God."
"Yes," the man said.
"Where have you been?"
Dalinar said.
"I've always been here," God said.
"Always with you, Dalinar. Oh, I've watched you for a long, long time."
"Here? You're not the Almighty, are you?"
"Honor? No.
He truly is dead, as you've been told."
The old man's smile deepened, genuine and kindly.
"I'm the other one, Dalinar. They call me Odium."
57. Passion. "If you would speak to me further, I request open honesty. Return to my lands, approach my servants, and I will see what I can do for your quest."
Odium.
Dalinar scrambled to his feet, lurching backward and seeking a weapon he didn't possess. Odium, standing in front of him. The Stormfather had grown distant, almost vanished, but Dalinar could sense a faint emotion from him, a whine, like he was straining against something heavy. No, that was a whimper. Odium rested his golden scepter against the palm of his hand, then turned to regard the men fighting over shard blades.
"I remember this day," Odium said. "Such passion. And such loss. Terrible for many, but glorious for others. You are wrong about why the Radiance fell, Dalinar. There was infighting among them, true, but no more than in other eras. They were honest men and women, with different views at times, but unified in their desire to do what was best."
"What do you want of me?" Dalinar said, hand to his breast, breathing quickly. Storms, he wasn't ready. Could he ever be ready for this moment? Odium strolled over to a small boulder and settled down. He sighed in relief, like a man releasing a heavy burden, then nodded to the space next to him. Dalinar made no move to sit.
"You have been placed in a difficult position, my son," Odium said. "You are the first to bond the Stormfather in his current state. Did you know that? You are deeply connected to the remnants of a god."
"Whom you killed?"
"Yes. I'll kill the other one, too, eventually. She's hidden herself somewhere, and I'm too shackled."
"You're a monster."
"Oh, Dalinar. This from you, of all people?
Tell me you've never found yourself in conflict with someone you respect. Tell me you've never killed a man because you had to, even if, in a better world, he shouldn't deserve it.
Dalinar bit back a retort. Yes, he'd done that. Too many times.
I know you, Dalinar,
Odium said. He smiled again, a paternal expression.
Come, sit down. I won't devour you or burn you away at a touch.
Dalinar hesitated. You need to hear what he says. Even this creature's lies can tell you more than a world of common truths. He walked over, then stiffly sat down.
What do you know of us three?
Odium asked. Honestly, I wasn't even aware that there were three of you.
More, in fact,
Odium said absently.
But only three of relevance to you. Me, Honor, Cultivation. You speak of her, don't you?
I suppose, Dalinar said. Some people identify her with Roshar, the spren of the world itself.
She'd like that,
Odium said.
I wish I could simply let her have this place.
So do it. Leave us alone. Go away. Odium turned to him so sharply that Dalinar jumped.
Is that, Odium said quietly, an offer to release me from my bonds, coming from the man holding the remnants of Honor's name and power?
Dalinar stammered. Idiot, you're not some raw recruit. Pull yourself together. No, he said firmly.
Ah, all right then,
Odium said. He smiled, a twinkle in his eyes.
Oh, don't fret so. These things must be done properly. I will go, if you release me, but only if you do it by intent.
And what are the consequences of releasing you?
Well, first I'd see to Cultivation's death. There would be other consequences, as you call them, as well.
Eyes burned as men swept about themselves with shard blades, killing others who had mere moments before been their comrades. It was a frantic, insane brawl for power.
And you can't just leave? Dalinar asked. Without killing anyone?
Well, let me ask you this in return. Why did you seize control of Alethkar from poor Elokar?
I... Don't reply. Don't give him ammunition.
You knew it was for the best, Odium said. You knew that Elokar was weak and the kingdom would suffer without firm leadership. You took control for the greater good, and it has served Roshar well.
Nearby, a man stumbled toward them, limping out of the fray. His eyes burned as a shard blade rammed through his back, protruding 3 feet out of his chest. He fell forward, eyes trailing twin lines of smoke.
A man cannot serve two gods at once, Dalinar, Odium said. And so I cannot leave her behind. In fact, I cannot leave behind the splinters of honor, as I once thought I could. I can already see that going wrong. Once you release me, my transformation of this realm will be substantial.
You think you'll do better?
Dalinar wet his mouth, which had gone dry.
Do better than others would for this land? You, a manifestation of hatred and pain?
They call me Odium,
the old man said.
A good enough name. It does have a certain bite to it. But the word is too limiting to describe me, and you should know that it is not all I represent.
Which is?
He looked to Dalinar.
Passion, Dalinar Kholin. I am emotion incarnate. I am the soul of the spren and of men. I am lust, joy, hatred, anger, and exultation.
I am glory and I am vice. I am the very thing that makes men, men. Honor cared only for bonds, not the meaning of bonds and oaths, merely that they were kept. Cultivation only wants to see transformation, growth. It can be good or bad, for all she cares. The pain of men is nothing to her. Only I understand it. Only I care, Dalinar.
I don't believe that, Dalinar thought. I can't believe that. The old man sighed, then heaved himself to his feet.
If you could see the result of Honor's influence, you would not be so quick to name me a god of anger. Separate the emotion from men, and you have creatures like Nail and his skybreakers. That is what Honor would have given you.
Dalinar nodded toward the terrible fray on the field before them.
You said I was wrong about what caused the Radiance to abandon their oaths. What was it really?
Odium smiled.
Passion, son. Glorious, wondrous passion. Emotion. It is what defines men, though ironically you are poor vessels for it. It fills you up and breaks you, unless you find someone to share the burden.
He looked toward the dying men.
But can you imagine a world without it? No, not one I'd want to live in. Ask that of cultivation next time you see her. Ask what she'd want for Roshar. I think you'll find me to be the better choice.
Next time? Dalinar said. I've never seen her.
Of course you have,
Odium said, turning and walking away.
She simply robbed you of that memory. Her touch is not how I would have helped you. It stole a part of you away, and left you like a blind man who can't remember that he once had sight.
Dalinar stood up.
I offer you a challenge of champions, with terms to be discussed. Will you accept it?
Odium stopped, then turned slowly.
Do you speak for the world, Dalinar Kolin? Will you offer this for all Roshar?
Storms, would he?
Either way, I don't accept.
Odium stood taller, smiling in an unnervingly understanding way.
I need not take on such a risk, for I know, Dalinar Kolin, that you will make the right decision. You will free me.
No, Dalinar stood. You shouldn't have revealed yourself, Odium. I once feared you, but it is easier to fear what you don't understand. I've seen you now, and I can fight you.
You've seen me, have you? Curious.
Odium smiled again. Then everything went white. Dalinar found himself standing on a speck of nothingness that was the entire world, looking up at an eternal, all-embracing flame. It stretched in every direction, starting as red, moving to orange, then changing to blazing white. Then somehow the flame seemed to burn into a deep blackness, violet and angry. This was something so terrible that it consumed light itself. It was hot. A radiance indescribable, intense heat and black fire, colored violet at the outside. Burning. Overwhelming. Power. It was the scream of 1,000 warriors on the battlefield. It was the moment of most sensual touch and ecstasy. It was the sorrow of loss, the joy of victory. And it was hatred. Deep, pulsing hatred, with a pressure to turn all things molten. It was the heat of 1,000 suns. It was the bliss of every kiss. It was the lives of all men wrapped up in one, defined by everything they felt. Even taking in the smallest fraction of it terrified Dalinar. It left him tiny and frail. He knew if he drank of that raw, concentrated liquid black fire, he'd be nothing in a moment. The entire planet of Roshar would puff away, no more consequential than the curling smoke of a snuffed-out candle. It faded, and Dalinar found himself lying on the rock outside Feverstone Keep, staring upward. Above him, the sun seemed dim and cold. Everything felt frozen by contrast. Odium knelt down beside him, then helped him rise to a seated position.
"There, there. That was a smidge too much, wasn't it? I had forgotten how overwhelming that could be. Here, take a drink."
He handed Dalinar a water skin. Dalinar looked at it, baffled, then up at the old man. In Odium's eyes, he could see that violet-black fire, deep, deep within. The figure with whom Dalinar spoke was not the god. It was merely a face, a mask. Because if Dalinar had to confront the true force behind those smiling eyes, he would go mad. Odium patted him on the shoulder.
"Take a minute, Dalinar. I'll leave you here. Relax. It..."
He cut off, then frowned, spinning. He searched the rocks.
"What?" Dalinar asked.
"Nothing. Just an old man's mind playing tricks on him."
He patted Dalinar on the arm.
"We'll speak again, I promise."
He vanished in an eye blink. Dalinar collapsed backward, completely drained. Storms. Just storms.
"That guy," a girl's voice said, "is creepy."
Dalinar shifted, sitting up with difficulty. A head popped up from behind some nearby rocks. Tan skin, pale eyes, long dark hair, lean girlish features.
"I mean, old men are all creepy," Lift said. "Seriously. All wrinkly and, hey, want some sweets, and, oh, listen to this boring story. I'm on to them. They can act nice all they want, but nobody gets old without ruining a whole bunch of lives."
She climbed over the rocks. She wore fine Azish clothing now, compared to the simple trousers and shirt from last time. Colorful patterns on robes, a thick overcoat and cap.
"Even as old people go, that one was extra creepy," she said softly. "What was that thing, Tykebutt? Didn't smell like a real person."
"I call it Odium," Dalinar said, exhausted. "And it is what we fight."
"Huh. Compared to that, you're nothing."
"Thank you."
She nodded as if it were a compliment.
"I'll talk to Gox. You got good food at that tower city of yours?"
"We can prepare some for you."
"Yeah, I don't care what you prepare. What do you eat? Is it good?"
Yes.
"Not military rations or some such nonsense, right?"
"Not usually."
"Great."
She looked at the place where Odium had vanished, then shivered visibly.
"We'll visit."
She paused, then poked him in the arm.
"Don't tell Gox about that Odium thing, okay? He's got too many old people to worry about already."
Dalinar nodded. The bizarre girl vanished, and, moments later, the vision finally faded. The end of Part 2. Interludes. Kaza, Teravangian, Venli.
Interlude 4. Kaza. The ship First Dreams crashed through a wave, prompting Kaza to cling tightly to the rigging. Her gloved hands already ached, and she was certain each new wave would toss her overboard. She refused to go down below. This was her destiny. She was not a thing to be carted from place to place, not any longer. Besides, that dark sky, suddenly stormy, even though the sailing had been easy up until an hour ago, was no more disconcerting than her visions. Another wave sent water crashing across the deck. Sailors scrambled and screamed, mostly hirelings out of steam, as no rational crew would make this trip. Captain Vazermeb stalked among them, shouting orders, while Draws, the helmsman, kept them on a steady heading. Into the storm. Straight into the storm. Kaza held tight, feeling her age as her arms started to weaken. Icy water washed over her, pushing back the hood of her robe, exposing her face and its twisted nature. Most sailors weren't paying attention, though her cry did bring Vazermeb's attention. The only Thalen on board, the captain didn't much match her image of the people. Thalens to her were portly little men in vests, merchants with styled hair, who haggled for every last sphere. Vazermeb, however, was as tall as an Alethi, with hands wide enough to palm boulders and forearms large enough to lift them. Over the crashing of waves, he yelled,
"Someone get that soul caster below deck!"
"No!" she shouted back at him.
"I stay!" "I didn't pay a prince's ransom to bring you," he said, stalking up to her, "only to lose you over the side. I'm not a thing to—"
"Captain!" a sailor shouted. "Captain!" They both looked as the ship tipped over the peak of a huge wave, then teetered, before just kind of falling over the other side. Storms. Kaza's stomach practically squeezed up into her throat, and she felt her fingers sliding on the ropes. Vazermeb seized her by the side of her robe, holding her tight as they plunged into the water beyond the wave. For a brief, terrifying moment, they seemed entombed in the chill water, as if the entire ship had sunk. The wave passed, and Kaza found herself lying in a sodden heap on the deck, held by the captain.
"Storming fool," he said to her. "You're my secret weapon. You drown yourself when you're not in my pay, understand?"
She nodded limply, and then realized with a shock she'd been able to hear him easily. The storm was gone. Vazermeb stood up straight, grinning broadly, his white